This is the Oddball Show, a podcasting collaboration from JP Lab Productions and Oddball Magazine.
Hey everybody, it's Jason from the Oddball Show. I'm here with Neil Silberblatt of Voices of Poetry. Neil, did you hear how my voice just cracked there?
I did. That was very nice.
Grown man. Grown man voice just cracked. 16 seconds into the show, I've already made a fool of myself.
You're doing fine, man.
Fantastic. Thanks. Hey, so Neil, let's talk. You are the author of Past Imperfect.
I am.
And the organizer of Voices of Poetry.
I am.
If you don't mind, maybe we'll dip into the fact that you are currently a cancer survivor.
Yes, that's fine.
And we have a mutual friend who's dear to us, Joe Gouveia, who passed away a few years back. And we put our poems together for him back when. And after a internet discretion of my own mistake, I actually reached out to you.
No, God, please.
No, we won't rehash it. But we talked about it. I basically had a whole. I had an internet beef with Neil for like 2 seconds, and I was like, "Wait a minute, I'm beefing with Neil Silberblatt of Voices of Poetry."
Hey, listen, I beef with myself all the time.
Neil, you have no idea how many times I get into needless arguments for stupid reasons.
That's what the internet is for, man. That's why Al Gore invented the interweb.
So let's talk Voices of Poetry,
please.
We had a good conversation pre-show about just how far Voices of Poetry has actually come from its inception.
Yeah, from very, very, very humble beginnings.
From its very, very humble beginnings. And I would like you just to – why don't you just introduce yourself to my listeners of the Oddball Show.
Sure.
Who are mostly poetry lovers, so they probably already know who you are, Neil.
Oh, cool.
Most likely, some of them are probably Voices of Poetry fans because your network's pretty vast, actually.
Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on the show. I admire what you guys do over at the Oddball. My name is Neil Silberblatt. I've been writing poetry for the better part of 45 years. And reading it for as long, and studying it for as long, on and off. Some years ago, quite a few years ago now, I began realizing that although there are a lot of open mic events, and which are wonderful, by the way, there weren't that many events or forums at which poets who were really serious about their craft could read their work in a receptive venue. Where you're not competing with clanging dishes or yelling waiters, and where people are actually there to hear the poetry as opposed to there to have a drink or eat dinner, and the poetry is kind of ancillary. And so I began contacting, this is very early on, libraries, museums, bookstores to see if they'd be willing to host poetry readings. And the response I got was quizzical, puzzled, dismissive, but I kept at it. And long story short, almost 8 years later, we're still at it, having organized upwards of 300 some odd events with 500 some odd poets and probably twice or three times that much people in the audience. We've had events at a whole range of venues, ranging, as I mentioned to you when we were having our pre-show conversation, ranging from a boxing gym in Paterson, New Jersey, to the Mount, Edith Wharton's home in Lenox, Mass, to a beautiful museum, the Rubin Museum of Art in New York City, to a whole range of venues, from a bowling alley on Cape Cod, one of our more disastrous events, the gorgeous Promisana Art Association and Museum.
Let's relive a couple of those events. So I would love to hear about the most beautiful event that you ever read at. And of course,
the most disastrous.
The most disastrous, but I also just would like to hear about a boxing ring event. I know we
I'll start with the boxing ring event. I mean, growing up when I did, I was always fascinated by Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier and George Foreman and all those guys. And I'd watch the fights on TV, which basically meant WPIX or WNEW in New York City. And I always thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a poetry reading at a boxing gym? And I shared that bizarre thought with a friend of mine who lives in Paterson, a lovely home in Paterson, New Jersey. And she said, are you serious? And I said, yeah. She said, I can make that happen. I said, please do. So she managed to put me in touch with this place called Ike's and Randy's Boxing Gym. Now, Ike's and Randy's is not in a fashionable section of Paterson. It is a serious boxing gym. That's what they do there. It's guys work out there and train to box. And suffice it to say that they had never hosted a poetry event before.
Yeah, probably they have never done that.
They'd never hosted a poetry event before. So we show up with chairs and books and what have you. And the boxers who were working out there looked at us and said, what are you doing here? Because we looked like we had no business being there. You know, we really looked like we were out of place.
Us poets, I mean, sometimes we are out of place sometimes.
Yes. And I looked and said, we're here for poetry. What do you say? What are you doing? I said, we're having a poetry reading. The guy looked at me and started laughing. He said, no, seriously. I said, I'm as serious as a heart attack. And he said, poetry reading. I said, yeah, man, stick around and find out. He looked at me, he looked at the other boxers. It was like, poetry. I said, yeah, poetry. I said, stick around. So we had in the audience, the dean, it was a full house, by the way. We had the dean of students from NYU. We had the dean of the head of the MFA program at NYU. We had the dean of students at Columbia. And we had about a dozen or so boxers who were still in their robes. sitting down and listening to poetry, and they were really into it. One of the boxers, one of the poets who was reading, is an MFA student at NYU, and he himself is a Golden Gloves boxer. One of the poets who was scheduled to read couldn't make it because his car broke down, so I wasn't going to read at that event. I wound up reading at that event. Afterwards, the boxers came over to me and said, "That was great, man. You should do that again. That was great. I've never been to a poetry reading before." I said, "That's okay. I've never been to a boxing gym before either."
That's a great idea, Neil. It's a great idea to put together.
The idea behind Voices of Poetry, behind my former Voices of Poetry, was, as I've said many times, was to bring good contemporary poetry to people and vice versa. I mean, I don't want to just have it at a museum or at a shrine or at a, you know, there are lots of lovely establishments and we've read at some of them. But my idea was to bring it to people who ordinarily would not be exposed to contemporary poetry.
You absolutely should do that again. I think that's a great idea.
We are playing an event this fall
in a boxing ring?
At that same boxing gym.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, cool.
Yeah, at that same boxing gym.
Yeah, let us know when that is, and I'll promote it on the show and on
all. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're still figuring out a date right now, but it'll be this fall.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, I mean, I think that's great that you can bring, poetry to, you know, well, I mean, we've talked about it, about poetry in general, and I feel like there is a divide between different, I don't want there to be a divide, but I feel like there's a divide between poetry styles, poetry ages, poetry, everything, people, some people like despise rhythm and some people.
And that's healthy. That's healthy. Imagine if the Stones are great. I love The Who. But imagine if there was just the Stones or just The Who. You know, eventually you get bored with it.
Exactly.
We need some variety. We need some discord. We need some dissonance. You know, Mozart is lovely. I love Mozart. I love Bach. I love Beethoven. But, I couldn't take 24 hours, 7 days a week of Beethoven or Bach or Mozart.
Yeah.
There has to be some Jelly Roll Morton there. There has to be some Boogie Woogie. There has to be some Bessie Smith.
Nice. You know? Jelly Roll Morton. Nice. Yes. Awesome.
So you need some you need some variety. You need some slam poetry. You need some hip hop poetry. You need some limericks. God help us. You need some haiku. You need a whole variety so you can sample it. So you can see, okay, that works for me. That doesn't work for me. You know, I like that. I like that a lot. I like that less.
I'm trying to bring to the Norwood area. I'm trying to with the Oddball magazine presents is trying to be break down all the barriers of different forms of poetry and barriers like that.
Right. Well, I mean, now, frankly, most contemporary poets write in free verse, unmetered poetry, prose poems, if you wish. Mm-hmm. I haven't had that many poets who've read metered work. On the other hand, I don't know if you know Tom Daly. Tom Daly is a wonderful poet. He's read some of our events. He's hosting a poetry slam while I'll be reading.
Homes for My Mother, is that what he wrote?
Yes, exactly. That. And Tom has written some beautiful metered work. And I love having him. First of all, he writes beautifully. He reads it beautifully. And it's nice to have, for a change of pace, some metered rhyming poetry.
Now, what I like about Tom Daly is he sets his watch before he reads poems.
He does. God bless him. I hope he's listening to this. Tom, if you are, keep at it. I love you.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, he really sets a precedence up there on stage by setting his watch.
And he takes, and this I say with the ultimate respect, he takes his stuff seriously. He treats it with respect. He treats his audience with respect. What drives me up a wall, and this is, you know, my own personal bête noire, is poets who offer a 10-minute explanation for a 3-minute poem. You know, just like I say, in the New Yorican Cafe, read the damn poem.
Yep. I fell into that the other day. I went to an event in Brockton at a youth culture event, a youth partnership. It was a slam event. It was a slam and hip hop event, and I was trying to go into the explanation of my poem, and then I was like, I need to read my poem.
Yeah, especially if you're under time constraint. If you have half an hour to read, okay, fine. Then you need some leeway there. But if you're an open mic reader and you have 5 minutes to read, and you spend three minutes describing what you're reading, then you better have a 2-minute poem.
There's a lot of interesting things that some people do on the mic. If you have three, let me ask you, Neil, if you have three poems, right? Like you're given three poems to read in front of an audience.
Right.
I'll read
two.
You'll read two and then you'll read one of someone else.
I'll read two and that's it. I want to leave the audience wanting more.
Oh really? I want to make them drained.
I want them curious.
Yeah.
I want them curious. Because I speak quickly as it is. So when I read, I try to, you know, let the poem work on its own. Mm-hmm. You got to trust the words. And I want to give the poem a chance to work and see if it does work. Sometimes it doesn't. That's informative. Sometimes it works in a way you didn't anticipate. I've gotten poems which I thought were being serious, and they've elicited laughter, maybe nervous laughter perhaps, but laughter. Mm-hmm. And that's back to the drawing board going, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, it throws me off when someone laughs at my poetry. And then
Sometimes there's humor in my poetry, black humor sometimes. So it's okay, but I don't want it to be like a Shecky Green routine, like we're like, but I'm bummed. So going back, you asked me earlier about, so I told you about the boxing gym.
We tangented and now we're back.
That's okay. One of the nicest places that we've read at, well, it's so hard to choose. It's probably a very close tie. So with the Rubin Museum of Art in New York City on West 17th Street.
Okay.
Which I had a certain affinity to because it was the old Barney's warehouse when I went for my bar mitzvah suit just a few years ago.
You read at the place where you got your bar mitzvah?
It was before it was a museum. It was the Barney's warehouse.
Oh, that's incredible, Neil.
And it's a gorgeous, if you have a chance to go to New York City or if you're in New York City, visit the museum. It's on West 17th Street. It's called the Rubin, R-U-B-I-N, Museum of Art. It is the greatest collection of Tibetan, Himalayan, and Buddhist art this side of Tibet. Beautiful, beautiful space.
And so that's the Rubin Museum in New York.
New York City. And they could not have been nicer. They had a sound engineer working with us. They had a lighting engineer working with us.
Oh, wow.
It was a gorgeous performance space. We had some phenomenal poets. We had Cornelius Eady reading with us. We had Jericho Brown reading with us. We had Daniel Tobin reading with us.
I've heard that name before, Daniel Tobin. Yep.
So we had some phenomenal, but we had some great musicians as well. And it was packed. It was packed, and everybody, maybe because of the space, because of all the lighting and the sound and the ambiance, everybody was at the top of their game. And we get people there, young people. Frequently, what I've noticed is at poetry events is you get what I call the white-haired crowd, which is fine. I am now a member of the white-haired crowd. But I'm always happy to see dark hair in the audience. I'm always happy to see tattoos in the audience. I'm always happy to see, multiple piercings in the audience. I'm happy to see 20 and 30 year olds.
Yeah. I think that's
that's what I saw at the museum. And it made me thrilled. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy to see anybody in the audience, frankly, many times, if it's not a slam poetry event, or if it's not an open mic event where there are young people showing up to read or hearing their friends read, more often than not, the people you get in the audience are seasoned, shall we say?
Yeah, I agree with you, Neil, and I think that's what I'm trying to do with Oddball Magazine Presents, and I think Philip and Everything Has a Voice and the Brockton Library, we're trying to do that as well. Is we're trying to bring in a diverse age range. In fact, the Brockton Everyone Has a Voice series. Mm-hmm. They have a high school student or a college student read, and then a seasoned poet. They say, that's incredibly empowering for a young high school age kid or like a college kid just to read their poetry and have like 20 minutes. That's
empowering. Right. And as I shared with you when we were having our conversation before the show, we had an event this past November. At another gorgeous venue, The Mount, Edith Wharton's home in Lenox, Mass, which is a beautiful, beautiful venue. We'll be back there again this fall. If you have a chance to go to the Berkshires, please visit it. It's just breathtaking. The grounds, the estate, just breathtaking. And we had that event featured Frank B. Dart, the winner of the Pulitzer Prize in 2018 for poetry. Maybe one of our finest contemporary poets. And Frank is 80 years old. I just can't say enough good things about Frank B. Dart's work. If people aren't familiar with it, please go to your library and check it out. It's great stuff. Two younger poets, Kristen Hill and Rage Hezekiah. And they both were young. When I say young, 20s, vibrant, dynamic, incredibly good poets, as dedicated to their craft as Frank is. Completely different style. And they brought down the house. I mean, I love their work. I love hearing them read. I love reading their work on the page. I love hearing them deliver the work. It was nice to have that kind of range in terms of styles, in terms of ages at the same event.
There was an Oddball Symposium, which was nice, that Chad.
Oh, nice.
I can tell you a story about that one if you want. And then also the next year there was one with Rick McIntyre and Lewis Morris and some other people. And it was a students, no, it was a poets with disability. Unfortunate name, but whatever. That's what it was. And we all read and we rocked the house. And also Colin Killick was one of was the guy who started that, and he's a great guy. I think I might have even had him on the show at one point. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I remember talking to Kristen in that room. There's a room in the very it's like a big open courtyard room.
I know what you mean.
And I said hi to her, and she had a notebook, and it was, I could tell she was just a real writer, and I really appreciate
it. She really is. She's a real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. If she's listening to this, Kristen, love you, love your work. Looking forward to hearing you read again at our event in May.
What is your event in May?
In May, we're going to be back at a gallery in West Barnstable called the Tao, T-A-O, Water Art Gallery. It's a beautiful gallery with a really museum-quality collection of contemporary Asian art. It's run by a gal, Diane Tong, T-O-N-G. Beautiful, beautiful space in West Barnstable on Route 6A. And again, if you're not familiar with the gallery, go check it out. Tao Water Art Gallery on Route 6A in West Barnstable. And Kristen Hill will be one of the poets reading there.
Okay, well, you heard that. And yeah. I think we should definitely shout out a lot of these events so my listeners
can
plug it on the calendar towards the end of the show. I was going to ask you, so I am kind of close to the Cape, and I spent some time at the Scuscet Beach area. Uh-huh. Have you ever been to the Scuscet Beach in Bourne? It's beautiful.
I have not been. I probably need to go. I've heard.
It's like the tip of it's like entering the Cape. It's like just literally entering the Cape. So like anyone who like can't really go to the Cape, can go past the Bourne Bridge and then go to Scuscet Beach. It's right after that, right off the Cape Cod Canal.
Gotcha.
And I would be curious to see if there's any readings around that area, because I know that there's the Mike Amato series in Plymouth, and we have the series in Brockton. And you have the Cape pretty much pretty much all over the Cape, but
all over New York City, all over and in May we're going to be up in Maine.
Oh, in Maine,
Maine, our first event in Maine,
Portland,
Portland Longfellow Books in Portland, Maine.
Oh, nice.
With four poets laureate.
Really,
we will have the current or former poets laureate of New Hampshire, Vermont, Rhode Island, and Maine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a really powerhouse event.
Now, do you ever have events with open mics where anyone can touch the mic, or is it pretty much a poet has to be invited to go to your event?
They can touch it. They just can't read from it. No. Starting out, I'm gonna get in trouble for that. I know that. Starting out, we had an open mic as part of the Voices of Poetry events.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was disastrous.
It
was. I mean, we had people who I would tell them, only, one poem or two poems, and this guy would read a 10-page single space, both sides of the page, one poem.
Hey, you said that, Neil. You said one poem. You didn't know.
Yeah, I want to read two poems: the Paradise Lost and Paradise Found.
I got that reference, man. Education, man. Thank you.
So, ordinarily, we don't have open mics at our Voices of Poetry events, but we varied that. We've had events at the Tilden Arts Center at Cape Cod Community College, where students have been invited to read their work. This April 18th, to be precise, we will have an event at a place in Stockbridge, Mass, called Chesterwood, which is the home and studio of sculptor Daniel Chester French, the guy who made the Lincoln Monument.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that event will also feature some four really exemplary poets. But it will also feature students who have been selected from local and regional high schools. We're leaving it to the schools to select the students.
Great idea.
We invited the local regional schools to select students to read work inspired by the sculptor or by his favorite subject, Abe Lincoln, and to read their work at this event. So I'm looking forward to that. And this is another gorgeous venue people should check out. It's called Chesterwood. It's in Stockbridge, Mass. Very cool place.
And then we talked earlier about Robert Pinsky's coming to town.
He is. I am thrilled. Three-time former U.S. Poet Laureate Robert Pinsky will be reading at our Voices of Poetry event on Thursday, April 23, at 7:00 at Wellfleet Library. He will be joined by two other fantastic poets, Andrea Cohen, who is head of the series in Cambridge, and Gail Mazur.
Long division. I always liked Andrew Cohen.
And Gail Mazur, who is a visiting professor at Boston University, will also be reading. So it'll be Mazur, Cohen, and Pinsky. It's a free event, April 23rd at 7 o'clock at Wellfleet Library. Come, but given this lineup, get there early. I would say no later than 6:30.
Yeah. That's really funny that you said Andrea Cohen. She's one of the poets that I like from a long time ago. I have one of her books called Long Division, which I like. Solid book.
And because I cannot clone myself, I will be there, but they were having another event that same night in Connecticut.
Okay.
So I wish I could clone myself. I would be at both. That same night, April 23rd at 6 o'clock, we will have the new poet laureate of Connecticut, Margaret Gibson, who's also a fantastic poet, and the former poet laureate of Northampton, Mass, Patrick Donnelly, are reading at our event at Gunn Memorial Library in Washington, Connecticut, in Litchfield County. So we have two amazing events with both free, in honor of National Poetry Month, on the same night in two different states. So thank God for Skype.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Thank God. So I think that now would be a good time to go into a little bit of what's going on with Oddball Magazine. But before we do that, I would just like to maybe have a brief discussion about what was coming to my mind is I think it's pretty cool that April is National Poetry Month.
Yes.
What do you think is the catalyst for us to have a poetry month now? It's a fun month, isn't it? Usually when they do the poem a day for 30 days.
I'm not sure who came up with the National Poetry Month. I think it's a great idea. My feeling is that, poetry is not limited to any one particular month. I know that February is African American History Month, which is bizarre because it's the shortest month, and March is Women's History Month. So we have all these months, chopped up. I don't know who comes up with these things. The other day was National Hot Dog Day. Don't ask me why or who. I have no idea. I ate a hot dog because I thought I should.
In celebration of
hot dogs. Yeah, I thought I should, so I did. My annual hot dog. So we will have three really good poetry events going on in April in honor of National Poetry Month. But we'll have some amazing even when April is come and gone, we will have some great events coming up. So,
all right. So before we cut to break, we've been talking about Voices of Poetry. Some people might not know what Voices of Poetry is. So, Neil, how do you get involved with Voices of Poetry? I guess that's the first
step. You send 5 box tops and a crisp $100 bill. No, only kidding.
$100 bill.
Exactly. Care of Jason Wright. If you're on Facebook, you look for Voices of Poetry, which has at this point is around 8,700 some odd members. I am the host and administrator. I read everything that goes on the page, believe it or not. If you're not on Facebook, you can look for me you can look for me online. I post on other social media sites, but the best way to be informed is probably through Facebook. We don't have a website yet. That's probably due to my own technical ineptitude.
Well,
at some point we will, but we don't yet. But we do have a very active Facebook page. So I would urge you to go check it out. And show up at the events, and you'll hear some great poetry from people who really know how to write, people who know how to read. We just had, this past Saturday, we had an event at Tompkins Square Library in New York City with Nick Flynn, fantastic poet and author.
Another both from out in Sac City.
Yep, the one and the same. Jennifer Franklin, who runs Slapering Hole Press over Hudson Valley Writer Center. Michael Klein. And Nicole Cooley, who's the director of the MFA program at Queens College, CUNY. So we That was free as well. Most of our rents, I'm glad to say, are free or for nominal cost. Mm-hmm. Nobody will ever be turned away from one of our events due to lack of funds. So, come, you're going to hear good stuff. What is Voices of Poetry? Voices of Poetry is simply, well, it's two things, really. One is the Voices of Poetry page on Facebook. That's one, which is kind mm-hmm. of a community bulletin board. And mm-hmm. the Voices of Poetry events, which I organize and present, are events at now 5 different states at a whole variety of venues featuring really good poets and writers of a whole variety of ranges and a whole variety of talents and a whole variety of subject matters. You're not going to hear the same stuff over and over again.
So if someone wants to get involved with Voices of Poetry and says, hey, I, for instance, like me, I am doing the trying to start something at the Norwood Library. Would I just say, hey, Neil,
you would contact me via private Facebook message. I would get back to you fairly soon and we'd set something up. That's the way it works. I would love to have you read one of our events, frankly.
So it sounds like your goal is New England, but you could go, I mean, New England and New York in Connecticut, but you could go even farther if you could reach this.
I mean, my goal, I mean, cancer has kind of thrown everything into a tizzy, but my goal was to go out to the Southwest and have an event in New Mexico. I've never been to Montana. I'd love to have an event in Montana. I've been invited to do an event in Colorado. I would love to do that.
So if anyone is listening out there on the Oddball Show and would like to think of bringing Voices of Poetry out to the West Coast, just
send me a message. Yeah, I'm on Facebook.
Neil Subberblatt or doing Voices of Poetry. I mean, the best thing you could do is you could set something up in California or Arizona, New Mexico, anywhere those places.
I would love to do that, man.
Yeah, I mean, just it's a great thing, and it's a good collaboration of different venues and stuff, and it's just a way to get the word out for poetry, and it's good for the community, and it's cool.
Absolutely, and at this point, I mean, I'm glad to say the Voices of Poetry has a track record, so that people know the effort that goes into our events. People, I hope, know that when they go to one of our events, they're going to hear good stuff. They're not going to hear, roses are red, violets are blue.
I wrote a poem called Roses Are Red, Violets Are Blue, and I published it in the Somerville.
Well, yeah. I'm sure yours is lovely, but you're not going to hear that at our events. You're not going to hear what you expect to hear at a poet. You're not going to hear stuff. Oh God, I hate poetry. My third grade English teacher really turned me off of poetry. No, get that idea out of your head. You're going to hear stuff that's going to move you. It's going to shake you. It's going to rattle you. It's going to make you laugh. It's going to make you cry. You're going to hear a whole range of stuff from people who know how to write and know how to read. Because
it's 8,000 people and there's like 10 different venues. So, I mean, anyone can be a part of it.
We've had events now. I actually tally them up. We've had events now at upwards of 30 different venues.
30 different venues. So you're going to find a poet that you're going to like if you go to a Voices of Poetry event.
Yeah. And you may even get to see some boxers.
I mean, even the boxers liked it. I mean, Patterson, New Jersey.
Even the boxers liked it, man. Even the boxers liked it.
That's what you call a callback right there. That's called an attentive audience.
I mean, the best. Oh God, I digress. But we did an event at above a wine store in Orleans. It was Main Street Wine and Gourmet. They have a great mezzanine space above the wine store. We did an event there, and people were stomping their feet at the music. I thought the mezzanine was going to collapse. And afterwards, this person came over to me and said, I've never been to a poetry event before. I said, yeah. I was kind of like dreading what happens next. I said, yeah. And I had no idea it could be this much fun. that was music to my ears, man. That was music to my ears. That's why I do this. Because it is fun. Because that person becomes an emissary. That person may then go to a bookstore and say, I'm going to go buy a book of poetry. I'm going to go to the library and check out a book of poetry.
There is a lot of mixed feelings about people in poetry, but honestly, it's a really interesting art form. It really is. And, you know, even if you aren't, if you're a listener of the Oddball Show and you're not really a poet, which, hey, thanks for being on listening. Cause we love you guys for, you know, being a, you know, listening and supporting Oddball Magazine and everything, but you know, we're pretty heavy on the poetry side. So, I mean, you know, you probably are a poet, and I'd love to know, you know, actually how, you know, what do people feel about poetry when you hear it live?
Well, for example, if you're a prose writer, and I love prose, we love it, you can spend a chapter describing how poor you were or how poor it was when you're growing up. But if you're a poet like Philip Levine, one of our former poet, U.S. Poets Laureate, he wrote the following in a poem called You Can Have It. And the line was, we were 20 for such a short time and always in the wrong clothes. There, that's it. In those few words, he has summed up the economic class in which he grew up, the hard, scrabble, working class environment in which he grew up. We were 20 for such a short time and always in the wrong clothes. That's so it, man.
We have to go to break, Neil, but I do want to ask you before we go to break, the question is, you know, I like to believe that there are no wrong answers in poetry.
No.
There are no rules.
No.
And that there are no laws in poetry. And
Except for the good rhyme, 5
in 1984.
Yeah.
But anyway, what we're saying, like, what I love about poetry is that I've never felt limited. And if you want to challenge yourself by writing in a form, you can. But if you want to write a free prose, you absolutely can too at the same time.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the best parts about it, because honestly, I don't know, I've looked at things that were just scraps of stuff on a paper, then I ended up turning it into a poem, whereas – you know, an equation is, there's a right and a wrong, and with poetry, I feel there are no wrong answers. And the only thing I feel that the problem is with poetry is the fact that the community is so divided. And I feel like,
it shouldn't be. I mean, there shouldn't be sharks versus jets.
Right, warriors.
Exactly. You know, it shouldn't be like skins versus shirts.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of room for all of us. There's plenty
of
room.
That's what I'm saying. It's a very open community. There's a lot of different forms, and the only thing is, I mean, one of my tags for Oddball Magazine is Writers Unite, and I wonder sometimes if it's a stupid tag, you know, but then I'm thinking like, no, I think one of the problems is about poetry is that people do, they stick to their groups, they stick to their styles, and they stick to their venues, and they don't branch out. I think that's the problem.
I would agree. Really stress yourself, man. And if I, not to sound too a fuddy-dud, but check out the old, you know, traditional styles of poetry, the Sestina, the Villanelle, the Ghazal, the Fantum, the Sonnet. Give it a shot. You know, you might surprise yourself.
Yeah.
You might surprise yourself. The old styles are worth exploring.
I feel the Sestina is rather simple. In a way, it's not really based on meter, right? It's basically just the last word moving around.
There's meter there as well.
I find the Villanelle to be nearly impossible to perfect. A Villanelle. I feel like the only really great one that I've ever read, and if you can correct me, of course, I'm going to go cliche and say, "Do not go gentle into thy good night."
Well, that's the most famous one, of course. That's the most famous.
What is another famous Villanelle besides that one?
Elizabeth Bishop wrote some beautiful villanelles. Edna St. Vincent Millay wrote some villanelles.
Right.
You know, check them out. But of course, the key is read. The key is read. I cannot emphasize this enough. Read. The ratio of reading to writing should be, you should read twice as much as what you write. You should read twice as, read twice as much as what you write. If you don't have time to read,
do you read anything, or do you have to read poetry?
No. Read don't read cereal boxes. But you know, yeah, read poetry. Read dead poets. Read contemporary poets.
Yeah.
Read foreign language poets. Read multiple translations of the same poet.
Read science. Throw science in there.
Yeah.
Read a book about the Beatles and throw Liverpool in there somewhere.
Absolutely. Read history. Read whatever. Just read.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got, first of all, the wealth of subjects that you're going to find to write about will expand exponentially. Number one, like, I didn't know I could write a poem about that. Holy shit. Pardon me for saying that.
No, that's okay. You can swear.
Okay. I had no idea I could write a poem about that subject. Wow. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? This guy wrote a poem about that. I had no idea.
Hey there, all you mammals and Martians. This is Prof from The Oddball Show. If you've been tuning into our preposterous podcast and like what you've been hearing, why not pop over to iTunes and leave us a review? iTunes not your thing? Well, then come on over and follow us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Buzzsprout. Learn more about who we are at oddballmagazine.com and jplineproductions.com. Link up with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send us a tasteful yet inspiring postcard, or just give us a holler in your nearest CB radio, good buddy. On behalf of Jason Wright and myself, thanks for listening to The Oddball Show, and stay tuned.
And we're back.
Okay.
So we were just having a great conversation with Neil. And we're going to spend this time, and we'll talk about all the – I thought maybe in the second segment, Neil, we could talk about our friend Joe Govea.
Oh, absolutely.
And let the listeners who know who Joe Govea is how much he meant to us.
Mm-hmm.
And people who don't know who Joe Govea is. And we'll talk about him because he was such a dynamic guy. And
he was.
And I want to just break to talk about what's going on with Oddball Magazine. So,
shoot.
All right, here we go. All right. Oddball Magazine here we go. Oddballmagazine.com. You know, you guys, if you've clicked on, if you're listening to our podcast, then you definitely know who Oddball Magazine is. We're your nonstop shop for poetry, art, and entertainment for the masses. If you want to check out the podcast you're listening to here, you can click it on the Oddball Magazine podcast. If you want to check out our bookshelf, where you can see Neil's Past Imperfect and other books, including Joe Govea's Cidades, you can go to our bookshelf. If you want to contact us to talk to us about anything, you can contact us there. You want to check out our artists and our columnists, you can check that out right in our menu. And also to submit, it's pretty easy. And if you want to learn a little bit about Oddball, just go to our About Oddball. So today, Monday, we had The Secrets of Skinny People with Jeffrey Fallon. He writes, he writes a comic strip on found paper. It's very
okay. Okay.
Yeah. He's great. He's funny. He's lately been doing a lot of, it looks like his character looks kind of like, Rick and Morty.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. And then we have Bill Harvey with, The Odds and Making the Serious Delirious. Which, you know, Bill has been doing our comic strip now for a couple of years, and we have some interesting news to talk to you guys about in the future about The Odds and a chiropractor office who might want to advertise with us. And so we will talk more about that. Wise Words with Bruce Wise. If you don't, Neil, do you know who Bruce Wise is?
I know the name. I don't know him personally.
You do know the name.
I know. I do. I recognize the name. I don't know. We haven't met.
Bruce Wise is from parts unknown. I've never met him. Don't know where he's from. But his column, he is a beast mode poet. I think Neil, you would specifically like Wise Words with Bruce Wise.
Yeah. Only, okay. I'll check it out.
All right. I'm going to read one for you. Okay.
Please.
I'm going to stop this and I'm going to read something from Wise Words with Bruce Wise. Okay. So what Bruce does is he takes his name, his full name, and he let's see. I'm just going to read one of his poems. He writes a lot of political stuff and a lot of interesting things. oh, here's one about the coronavirus. Here is,
oh my gosh,
in darkness. Let's hear this one. In darkness. Okay. So what he does is he takes his name, Bruce Wise, or either that, or he has a series of writers who look very similar to him. Anyway, it's called In Darkness by Edgar Allies Boo. So he took his name and made it Edgar Allies Boo.
Okay.
In darkness, far from Stoke Moran, swamp, adder, and baboon, besides the barrels, pipes, and shutters lit by but the moon, among the tires, boxes, vents, cements, and metal bars, far from night lanterns, glowing pokers, pull bells, and dog carts, nocturnal prowlers comb the city, filling blazing fires, the openings and closings of those deadly flaming pyres, such fevers breathing mad pursuit, such willful arrogance, and nightmares of brutality and insignificance. Besides the trains upon the street and corners fringed with fright, oh, coroners should have checked punctures in that grimace light. Edgar Allies Boo is a poet of darkness and an intimate acquaintance of Waldecky Erebus. Here's another one. Poeti Norak, 1995 to 2020, by W.S. Eel Barracuda. He's amazing, Neil.
Go ahead.
Started surfing in the seaside town La Sable d'Olonne, beginning on a shortboard when she was but 6 years young. She later took the longboard up, competing for 10 years, improving as she aged a champ off France's lovely piers. She recently went to Australia, every seeking waves, Poeti Norak chasing the rolling billow crust she craved. She loved to glide along the sliding waters of the sea. She loved to fly upon the splashing, flashing, smashing spree. She'd ride and ride until she died at age of 24 along the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, surfing nevermore. Yeah. W.S. Ale Barracuda is a poet of gorgeous beaches and the sea. Les Sables d'Olonne is a city in western France on the Atlantic Ocean of about 40,000. The circumstances of her death are unknown and are being investigated by local authorities. Dude, this guy is a beast, Neil. I don't know how Bruce became part of Oddball Magazine, but we are so happy that he's been almost now for 2 years. He's been, and Bruce, and if you're listening, Bruce, you, it's an amazing column, and you, and he usually gives about 10 poems per week, which is,
wow, pretty good.
Fantastic. Wow. And it's incredible. He's a beast poet. So, thank you, Bruce. And, sorry about, going on that tangent. So that was on Friday. And then we also had, James Van Looy on Thursday with Janet Cormier on Thursday as well. Wednesday, we had, the Underground Garden with Liza Zayas. And a really good event with Liza is coming up on Thursday. She's reading at, she's actually doing this impromptu poetry workshop at the Stuart Gardner Museum. On Thursday, which would be February 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's open to everyone. I think, it would be a poetry open mic. It would be a poetry, impromptu workshop, which is pretty cool. And it's kind of like think on your feet kind of poetry, which I'm really looking forward to what she's going to be bringing. It's called Creative Sway. So if you're in the Boston area, check out that.
Interesting.
Definitely. And then, Jocks Flory, our friend and, contributor, he put an essay by Jocks Flory, an excerpt from the author's latest book, cover art by Mary Lou Springsteen, and poem by Jocks Flory with new art by Mary Lou Springsteen. She did both the art and he did the writing. Actually, if you were to look at the website right after Jocks Flory, you would see my last podcast with the Oddball Show. Meet Gabe Howard, author of Mental Illness is an Asshole. And Gabe, that was a great show. Thank you for coming on. I know that it was busy for you to go on the show after being on the Psych Central for being the host of the Psych Central podcast and Not Crazy. And it was a lot of fun. Thanks for being on the show. And if you guys want to check that out, just click on the Oddball Magazine podcast section or just go to iTunes. You have my Jagged Thought 308, a review of Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. Do you know who David Goggins is?
Know the name. Don't know him personally.
Oh, he's a beast. He's an Iron Man. He's the definition of beast mode. He's inspirational, and what he does is he's he's run over, he's an ultra marathon runner. So he's run like 127 miles and he's gone through Hell Week three times. Wow. And he was a Navy SEAL and, very, very cool, very inspiring story. Dropped like 60 pounds in like 3 months to get going with that story. And it's a beautiful story. Well written too. So if you were listening and you can check it out on the bookshelf, definitely check out, David Goggins, You Can't Hurt Me, as well as, you know, some other really motivational books like Les Brown's Live Your Dreams. And Neil Silberman's Past and Perfect, which will be on there too. So if you're listening, check out oddballmagazine.com. If you're listening to our podcast right now, leave us a review at iTunes. We're also on Stitcher Radio and Buzzsprout and Spotify and iHeartRadio and TuneIn Radio. So listen, and you know, we'd love to hear back from you. So that's what's going on with Audible Magazine. More to come. There's a lot more to come. Before we go back to Neil, I just had a great event with Everyone Has a Voice. And I interviewed Nancy Brady Cunningham afterwards. And after she read and a high school poet named Lola, and thank you, Philip Hazouris, for setting up that event. It's really great, and I'm really glad I could be a part of that event. And if you guys are in the Brockton area, Brockton, Massachusetts, once a month at the Brockton Library, they have the Everything Has a Voice. Everyone has a voice, and it's great. And if you can't check it out, you can also check it out on Brockton Public Access. And last but not least, Oddball Magazine Presents will be at the Norwood Public Library on February 24th. And we're hoping to have poets, including you, to come and bless the mic. Poets of all styles and all skill levels. Writers Unite. Okay. All right. And we're back. Neil.
Yes.
Neil. Hey, man.
I'm here. Yeah.
So I thought that we would talk about in the second segment, unless there's anything else like burning that you want to talk about.
No, the show is yours, man.
Okay, cool. Well, let's spend some time talking about Joe Gouveia.
Gladly.
Okay. All right. Joe Gouveia was a dear friend of both Neil's and I's, mine and Neil's. And Joe got sick of cancer. He died a few years ago.
Yes.
Due to cancer. He died a brave battle of cancer, and you know, we supported him on the Oddball Magazine with Poems for Joe, and that's when I first knew of Neil Silberblatt, because you were one of the first people to write a tribute poem for Joe.
Yeah, well, Joe, if I can jump in here.
Well, you know Joe a little bit more, so why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about the man Joe Gouveia?
Joe, I knew Joe through his work before I actually met him. Joe was a force of nature. He was a poet. He was a motorcycle poet. He wrote a lot about riding on his bike. He was a poetry organizer. He put together a lot of events. He was fearless. And which aided him tremendously in his battle with cancer. And he was just incredibly supportive and generous with his time and with his intellect and with his passions. And if you were Joe's friend, you were his bosom friend. And if Joe didn't like you, you know, you were not. Let's put it that way. And you always wanted to be friends with Joe, because he had such a great insight and such a great mind and such a great passion and love of poetry. So I met Joe in person literally the day after I moved to the Cape. So if I moved on Wednesday, before I even unpacked, Thursday, I made a pilgrimage to his home on Linden Street in Hyannis. And Joe, I had to set the scene for you. Joe was then in his battle with cancer. And opening the door, the room was filled with marijuana smoke. Joe asked me if I wanted to light up, and I said, I think I already have, by virtue of just breathing the air in the room. And he said, I only have like half an hour to spend chatting with you. I said, that's fine. However, how long do you have? 2.5 hours later, we were still there chatting about poets we love, poets we don't love, poets we hate, poets who inspired us, poets who simply baffled us. And we were just, we developed a fast friendship. And tragically, he really went, it was his third and final battle with cancer.
Uh-huh.
And I would visit him at the hospital and then at hospice. And it was painful, tragic to see somebody that I really grew to love, withering away and becoming just this shell of a man.
Yeah.
What I shared with Jason before we went on the air was I remember visiting him at Tufts once, and I came with a very solemn expression, and I said, okay, I'm going to read you a serious poem. And Joe kind of groaned, and I proceeded to read Lydia, the Tattooed Lady, made famous by Groucho Marx, in a very serious way. And Joe just roared with laughter. You could actually hear him down the hallway. That's the kind of person he was. He had his great sense of humor, a great love of poets and poetry. I really wanted him to be one of the first poets to feature when I had an event here on the Cape, and sadly he was too weak to feature. So we had a video of Joe reading his work, which we presented at one of our events, the first and only time we've done that, a poet reading by video. And people were sobbing. People were crying. I was crying. And I visit his gravesite pretty regularly, so we can see what the competition is putting out, and keep him up to speed, as it were.
Yeah.
His book, his collection, Sonatas, is should be on everybody's bookshelf.
It's, oh my God, you can get it on the Audible Magazine bookshelf.
Yeah, he is. Everybody should have a Joe Gavea in their life to inspire them, to challenge them. And when I told Joe that I wanted to continue presenting Voices of Poetry events on the Cape, he sat down with me and said, oh, you have to have so-and-so, you have to have so-and-so, you have to invite so-and-so. And he gave me a list of like who to invite and frankly, who not to invite. He was right. He's right. As he was about so many things, he was right. His advice was well placed and well chosen.
So I'm looking at Audible Magazine and the Joe. So if you go on the columns, you can actually see all of Joe's the tribute to Joe's poetry, and there's all these pictures of Joe, and it's kind of making me sad looking at them because he was such a cool guy, you know.
Yeah, there's a picture of Joe. There's a picture of Joe, which I posted many times on his birthday on Voices of Poetry page, of Joe reclining on his beloved motorcycle.
Yes, isn't that the cover of Sadades?
Yes, yes. And it really just, it sums him up beautifully.
Yeah.
He loved motorcycles. He loved riding. He loved poetry. And this picture kind of sums all that up in one shot.
So I don't know if it would do Joe justice, but I would like to read Class Struggle. To the listeners of the Oddball Show right now. So I don't know. I don't know how. I mean, the way he read it, it was.
Bah. Yeah, don't even. I can't even try to imitate. I wouldn't.
I'm not gonna try. There's no way I can do it. So I'll just read it. Just listen to the words of this writer and just the power in these words and the truth. And forgive me if I do it wrong. I just think that this is a great poem. So, Class Struggle by Joe Gouveia. I have one carpenter, an alcoholic who's drinking again. He whacked his wife. Good, got a court date today. She may not show up if he goes back to AA. He's desperate now, so he's only smoking pot. Another lumper, a Vietnam vet, can only work alone. He's afraid of heights and can't be trusted near anyone with a hammer or nail gun. We use him for cleanups and dump runs. By the end of the week, the new kid from the tech who knows more than the rest will be fired. His dad used to beat him, won't be told what to do. He'll say his boss sucks and move to Florida. Somewhere I'll hire that student from the community college whose dad was a carpenter and died when he was 6. He is slow but meticulous, has a new girlfriend each week. I'll have one pregnant by August and transfer to full-time. My foreman's in rehab, withdrawing from heroin and crystal meth. He's the best I've got. His wife picks up his checks. She says he was molested by a priest as a kid, that he's not a bad guy, if only he could stay clean. Before mid-spring, I'll need more help and hire a half dozen helpers unskilled from the labor temp agency. Two will work out and stick around for a while, unlike their parents who too are in rehab. One new hire will learn fast, replace the foreman one day, thank me for teaching him a trade that pays and giving him a chance to prove himself, something the folks in the foster home never did. Others will quit, steal tools, start their own business, take down payments, never do the work, file for bankruptcy and keep the funds, pay off gambling debts instead of get rich quick. Some will be replaced by divorced union carpenters from the city who will say they moved to Cape Cod for the slower pace, has to be paid cash under the table or can't work while somewhere in Boston his kids are hungry. Another kid from the tech will eventually come along, hungry to show that he's one of the guys. He'll spend 10 minutes in the trailer looking for the wood stretcher the journeyman sent him for. Next week, that same journeyman will cut off his finger on the table saw while wearing OSHA-approved eye goggle after bragging about the safety course he took and how many years experience he has. Before the year is out and our building project's complete, the rookie will start dealing pot this summer, get arrested. The journeyman will switch careers selling insurance. The foreman might not make it through withdrawals. Of those who stay on, all will ask for a raise.
Wow.
Damn, Joe.
Woo. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, wow.
Hell of a... Have you ever heard him read Class Struggle before? It was really...
I did.
Oh, man.
I did.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. You did him proud.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And he was just such a good guy. And I know I only met him for a brief time in my life, but he did make a big impact. And so much that, you know, me and Chad decided to do the Poems for Joe. And, you know, seeing him read a couple times and just hoping that he'd get back from the battle of cancer and then just it not working. And
yeah.
It's him steadily declining. It was just really sad to see. And I wish I could have saw him when he was, you know, boss Joe Govea, you know, instead of how I, you know, he was still so strong at the end, but it just sounds like a wild life. And I wish I could have been more a part of that. So, what a good guy.
He was a very good guy and a decent guy. And it was a privilege and an honor to know him and call him friend.
Well, you know, lucky enough, now that I'm looking at the website, there are some cool poems of Joe Govea reading. You can see Joe Govea read Class Struggle so much better than I did. And it's on the website. Just go to see that. Just to be able to experience one of Joe's poems is a beautiful thing. And you can still get his book, Cidades, if only just to tribute the man, who really was a great poet and a really, really good person.
Yeah.
Do you have your poem that you wrote for Joe?
I wrote several poems for Joe, actually.
You want to read one?
The one was published in Oddball, actually. I can read that if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great if you could read that.
Yeah, the poem actually was begun before, and it was based on I imagined Mother Mary sitting Shiva for when Jesus was killed, after Jesus was killed. And especially because Joe's mom shared with me how she prayed to Mother Mary for her son. So just a very brief word of explanation. In Judaism, when someone you love dies, you sit Shiva. You observe a period of mourning called sitting Shiva. And during that period, you sit on hard wooden benches and you cover mirrors with sheets of cloth. Should I go ahead?
Yeah. Okay. Please go ahead.
Mother's Day. After the muslin was removed from the mirrors and her shoulders, she returned the wooden benches, which she used when she sat for her husband, and now would see no further service, and waited so patiently for him to return. every noise, every stirring of wind would stir her awake, certain that it was he. But the wind was simply the wind, carrying nothing but stale air moved about. She heard by rumor that he had visited the others and that woman, invited them to examine his wounds, see for themselves a little show and tell, even had dinner with them, but not her. She did not need to see the stigmata, feel the viscera, touch the space left by the spear. She had seen and touched enough of his wounds from when he first skinned his knee. She needed no more. Just to hear his voice again, once, before muslin was draped over her, would have sufficed.
Wow.
That was completed after Mother's Day, which is when Joe passed.
Yeah.
And that was written in his honor and was published, as I said, in Oddball Magazine. Thank you, Chad. Thank you, Jason. Yep. That was a hard poem to write.
How was it to read it after all these years?
Still like ripping off a scab.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Like ripping off a scab. I don't know if you get the reaction. If you've had trauma in your life, and who hasn't, once you write a poem about it, it's all better. No, it doesn't work that way. Getting the words down on the page helps, but it's not like it doesn't make it all better. Sometimes it makes you relive it. Sometimes it reminds you of it. Sometimes it brings back memories which you thought had been suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to get the words down. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting point that you say about putting the words down. And I think that's for many people, myself included, that is why I have devoted my life to poetry.
Yeah.
Is because, I don't really like devoted my life to it, but I love poetry. And it's because of being able to write and make sense of feelings like losing someone to cancer, right. Or just dealing with hardships. That's when I've written the majority of my poetry, to figure shit out, right? You know, like to figure something out.
And reading a poem or writing a poem is not going to give you, the answer with a capital A. That's what it's all about. No, that's not, if you're reading a poem to get the answer, then you need to reframe the question.
Right.
Will give you a chance to see how somebody else dealt with this. You're not the first person to survive a disease. You're not the first person to be dumped or to go through heartache. You're not the first person to experience horrific loss or joyous ecstasy. See how somebody else handled it.
Yeah. And like you said, I think it's an interesting idea to write. A good writing exercise, if anyone's listening, is to write as another person. Right. To write in the shoes of another person. I've done it before with Grace on the Train, and I've done it, Sister and a Stranger, and a bunch of other, stuff that I've done before. But write in the voice of someone else. And I think that's.
But always be conscious of your own voice. Never try to imitate somebody else. Never try to. Unless impersonators do that.
Well, don't necessarily know that it's not okay. Okay, so. Here's case in point. I was reading Stephen King, right? What do you think my poetry was like that day that I was reading Stephen King?
Spooky, I'm guessing.
Spooky, dark, right? So if, let's say, I'm reading something about science or something, my writing's a little bit more technical, listening to something more rhythmic. So it's not like – it's just like you're learning, you're immersing yourself in someone else's – writing, I feel like
I feel like it's not, I mean, unless you're like, you know, blatantly, you know, copying someone, I feel like it's okay to write in the styles of different people. As long as you know that your style, I mean, if you got your style on lock and you can just, your mind can go where it can go and you want to write in them, you know, you want to picture someone on the train and you want to write what their life is like that day, you know, go for it. That's cool. You know, if you want to write about, like, we were talking about, you know, dealing with this, and you made a good point about how, you know, read someone else and see how they've dealt with, you know.
Right. And for example, I mean, the most horrific loss imaginable is the loss of a child. Okay. That's, I mean, that we don't even have a word for that kind of loss. You lose a parent, you become an orphan. If you lose a spouse, you become a widow or a widower. We don't even have a word in our vocabulary for what it's like to lose a child.
No, there is no word for it, right?
It's so horrific. So yeah. God forbid that should ever happen to anybody, God, 1,000 times over. And you think, how could you possibly write about that? The great English poet, Ben Jonson, wrote an elegy for his dead son. In the 17th century, Edward Hirsch, more contemporary American poet, wrote a book called Elegy, about his son who died.
Wasn't there a poem that John Keats wrote to someone on their deathbed? Was it O.G.?
Rudyard Kipling, the famous poet Rudyard Kipling, wrote a poem about his son who was killed in World War I. Hmm. Read what I said before about reading other poets. It's not so that you'll have the answer. It's that you'll have a chance to say, how did he write about it? How did he deal with it? How did he, this incredible mammoth Shakespearean loss, epic Greek tragedy loss, how did other poets write about it? How do they tackle it? It may help, it may not help, but it will certainly open your eyes to how other people dealt with this subject.
And in the same vein, if someone is if you want to know how someone, say you're going through something, and you want to know how someone else has gone through it, then read a bio of someone who's gone through it, you know? I mean, there is something about reading poetry in the vein of someone who's going through something or someone's different voice. But, and this is clearly on an advocacy standpoint, reach out there if you're having trouble. You know, there's people who've gone through amazing things and have overcome surmountable odds.
Right.
They're on your local bookstore, bookshelf, you know?
Right. And then, if you're a vet dealing with PTSD, and you think there's no way for me to express what I've been through, my trauma that I've gone through, there is a way. You just haven't maybe found it yet. What I would tell you is, let me share you some poems by poets who've gone through other traumas, and so you can see how they dealt with it, and that may help you unlock the ability to write down what you've experienced. There are poets who've been writing about trauma from war since the time of Homer.
Mm-hmm.
Read them. Yes. Oh my God. Dead European poets. Yes. Dead European poets, but they have something to tell us. Holocaust.
Right. Right.
And if you think, oh my God, I can't write a poem about this or that. Yeah, you can. Read Primo Levi, who was imprisoned in Auschwitz, or Paul Celan, C-E-L-A-N, who was in a concentration camp at Birkenau. They lived through hell. They lived through hell and wrote about it. And read what they have to say. It will give you an insight that you won't get probably anyplace else.
Yeah.
And it will tell you, yeah, it's okay to write about this.
I think that was the best part. It's okay to write about this. It's okay to express myself in this way. It's okay for me to get this down on paper. It's okay for me to, you know, write with no, like, no fear of
being judged. Exactly. And nothing is off limits.
And that's the beauty of poetry. And I think we're on the same page that that's why poetry is a remarkable art form, because there is really no limit. And I wish there was more people who would understand that. And then, you know, you have poets that just also, I mean, going back to Joe, he had just a remarkable life. And that poem Class Struggle said so much in only a few lines. You know, and there's just like, I don't know. And one of the other cool things about poems is how people read them. And if you ever saw Joe Gouveia read that poem, you'll know.
Oh, I know. And right? that's a whole other subject. We could spend an hour talking about that. I mean, the page versus stage dichotomy.
Hey there, all you mammals and Martians. This is Prof from The Oddball Show. If you've been tuning into our preposterous podcast and like what you've been hearing, why not pop over to iTunes and leave us a review? iTunes not your thing? Well, then come on over and follow us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Buzzsprout. Learn more about who we are at oddballmagazine.com and jplineproductions.com. Link up with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send us a tasteful yet inspiring postcard, or just give us a holler in your nearest CB radio, good buddy. On behalf of Jason Wright and myself, thanks for listening to The Oddball Show, and stay tuned.
We could spend an hour talking about that. I mean, the page versus stage dichotomy. Not all poets. There are some great poets who were terrible readers of their work.
There's people who sound good on audio, like spoken. Right. But the poetry doesn't
work on the page. But again, not every. I mean, T.S. Eliot, one of our great 20th century poets, was, in my humble opinion, a terrible reader of his work.
Yeah.
You know, listen, if you go on YouTube, you could find T.S. Eliot reading his Wasteland, or you can find Sir Alec Guinness, the actor, reading the Wasteland. And Guinness's rendition is 1,000 times better. Yeah. W.H. Auden, another great 20th century poet.
But then there's people you have to experience on paper, like E.E. Cummings, who wrote all in lowercase. You know, that's a cool idea, right? I mean,
Cummings, although he's an American poet, had this, I'm not sure if it was a Harvard accent or an affectation of an English accent. But when you listen to recordings of Cummings reading his work, it's like, wait, you know, this is terrible.
Can you think of a writer that is just as good spoken as is written?
Oh, yeah, lots. Thomas Lux, he's gone now, but Thomas Lux was great. On the page, or find videos of him reading.
Thomas Lux,
L-U-X.
Okay.
Jack Gilbert, also gone now. Adrienne Rich, also contemporary American, gone now. Galway Connell, one of my favorite poets, also gone now. Among people who are still with us, Doug Anderson is a phenomenal reader, a phenomenal writer, and phenomenal reader of his work. Frank Bidart, Bidart, is a wonderful reader. Robert Pinsky is a wonderful reader of his work.
Who is reading on
April 23 at 7 o'clock at Wellfleet Library. Cornelius Eady, Eady, a phenomenal reader of his work. There are lots of people. Michael Klein, who read at our event Saturday in New York City. Jennifer Franklin, strike. Kristen Hill, we mentioned her earlier.
Yep. Can I ask you, Neil? What is if you were to give some advice to a poet about to step on the mic for the first time? What is it?
Listen. Listen to other poets read their work. See what works. See what doesn't work. Find your own voice, of course. Don't try to imitate them. But hear, hear what works. Really listen. And I actually posted this the other day on Voices of Poetry page. The key word for me is respect. Respect the words. Respect that they'll work. They don't need to scream them. You don't need to shout them. You don't need to gesture wildly. Respect the words. Respect your audience. Respect that they're at least as smart as you, that they don't need a half an hour explanation of what the poem means. Respect your own voice. You're not there as an impersonator. So respect that you have a voice worth hearing. Respect the space. Use a mic if you need to.
Project if you need to. Make sure you're heard. Respect the time. Don't cram 25 syllables into a space where only 5 syllables will work. So it all boils down to respect.
It sounds like it. It sounds like listen and respect.
Yeah, that's what, and it's easy to say, but like anything else, you know, how do you get better at something? You practice. How do you get better at, you know, playing harmonica? You practice. Billy Collins says you practice in front of goldfish. Practice in front of your friends. Practice in front of friends who will be honest with you, who will be, you know, who are not going to say, oh, I love everything you do, but who will really be honest with you and say, you know, that doesn't work, that does work.
My question is, because it's something that I would love to learn how to do, is memorize before I go on stage.
And gosh.
I don't know how to do. I don't know. What would you recommend for someone who wants to try and memorize their poems?
If you figure out that out, let me know. You know, Tom Daly does it, and he does it, as he said to me, by practice. And there are certain poems that I can memorize, that I can commit to memory. But it's really hard. It's hard. You know, don't worry about what I would tell a poet starting out, or even a poet not starting out, is don't worry about memorizing it, frankly. Mm-hmm. Just, it's okay to read it from the page, or if you prefer the screen. I'm old fashioned, I like reading it from the page. But just do the poem justice. You spend effort writing it, spend some effort reading it. You don't need to read it slowly, but don't read it. It's not a conversation. It's a poem.
Mm.
Let the words work. Mm. Don't avoid poet voice. Oh, my God. Please avoid poet voice.
It's like poet voices for – there's different poet voices for every genre.
If you ever want to laugh hysterically, go on YouTube and find William Shatner singing Mr. Tambourine Man by Bob Dylan. That is what you should not do.
Okay.
That is what you should not do. If you find yourself doing that, stop. Step away from the mic.
Step away from the mic if you sound like William Shatner.
Yeah. Yeah. Step away. Just I can't imitate it. But trust me, go on YouTube, find William Shatner, who I like Captain Kirk and the old Star Trek episodes, but William Shatner reading or singing Mr. Tambourine Man by Bob Dylan is maybe what they play on an endless loop in hell.
Okay. Good to know. That's if
you don't do that. And there are, and this is true with many younger poets, who are just starting out, they feel the need, if they have 10 minutes or 7 minutes, to cram as many poems as possible into that 7 minutes.
Yep.
Because they think that tomorrow they ship off for Cyprus. no, really. You're going to be here tomorrow. Assume you'll be here tomorrow. Assume you'll be here next week. No, you don't need to fill up every second with noise. Let the poem work. Let the poem settle. Go on YouTube. Watch W.S. Merwin reading his poems. Watch Thomas Lux. Watch Jack Gilbert. Watch these poets. Watch reading and hear what's working and see what doesn't work, frankly. And you will quickly get a feeling for it. In the same way that you can tell that a musician's off key. I mean, how do you know when you've heard a really good performance, and how do you know when you haven't heard a good performance? How do you know there's going to be Milli Vanilli and the Rolling Stones?
That's a good point. I mean, you probably wouldn't be able to hear a Milli Vanilli concert because they lip sync.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, when you watch Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits perform, you know you're hearing somebody who's serious about their craft.
Yeah. Yeah, he is a great musician. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Versus when you see somebody, I don't know, when you see, who's the guy that Donald Trump likes? I forget his name.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I forget his name. He's a whatever. I blocked his name from my memory.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's the same thing. How do you know that you're watching somebody, you know, when you see a really good baseball player step up to the plate, how do you know he's good? You watch it.
Because that's it. To be good, you have to strike out.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? I mean, that's how you're going to be. That's the only way that you can get good. So I guess my advice to a poet, and like I should give advice, but it would be to not be afraid of that mic and just do your best.
Yeah.
And eventually you'll be doing better and better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
You know?
Practice, man, practice.
So just so you said, respect the mic. Yes. Respect everything around it and listen to the poets.
That's what it boils down to me. Respect the words, respect the audience, respect the space, respect the venue. You know, that means maybe if you're reading in a church or a mosque or a synagogue, you don't read the Bible about Satan worship.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you're reading in a grade school, you don't read the Bible about gastrointestinal surgery.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Respect maybe save that poem.
And respect your audience, listen, and practice, I think.
Yeah.
And, all right.
I mean, it sounds like common sense stuff, like most things are, frankly.
Yeah.
But it boils down, you know, the first time I read, the second time I read, the third time I read, I sucked, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, most people do when they are starting out.
Yep.
That's okay. That's okay. It's okay to suck. You suck less and less every time you practice.
So let's close off with this question. What do you want to take away from setting up what is your goal for Voices of Poetry, and what do you want to leave with? Is this your legacy? Is Voices of Poetry?
Yes, absolutely. This is my carob tree, according to the old tale of the man who plants the carob tree, even though you won't live to see its fruit. What do I hope to see? I hope that this goes on long past when I'm gone. I hope that there are young poets out there who are inspired to write, who are inspired to read, who are inspired to go out and demand that their local library hosts events, who demand that their local bookstore carry poetry books beyond Robert Frost or Carl Sandburg, both of whom are fine, but you know, poetry is, you know, they're both dead and gone. Poetry continues. So my hope is that it prompts others to do what I'm doing. It prompts others to value this craft, which I love so much and hold so dear, and to read. Yes, dead poets, but to read a whole bunch of live ones and to hear a whole bunch of live ones and to understand just what this craft can offer. There's a reason why when they do programs for prisoners or they introduce them to Aeschylus, they would introduce them to Shakespeare. It's because, yeah, the poets may be dead, but their words aren't. The passions aren't. The feelings aren't. Yeah, Homer may be dead, but we can still find his words inspiring. You know, I did a class on the poetry of war, and I read the portion of the Iliad where Priam begs for the body of his son, and it's heartbreaking. And that was written just a few millennia ago, and it's still heartbreaking. So my hope is that people will seek this stuff out and will be as moved by it as I have been and will find it as rewarding as I have found it. So that's my hope.
Well, I mean, if anything, if there's any way that Oddball Magazine can help you spread the word of Voices of Poetry.
Oh, you're doing it, man. You're doing it.
Okay.
You're doing it.
And I have to say, Neil, I would love for you to come back on the show again because, I mean, dear listener, we've spoken for about an hour and 20 minutes, and it's been pretty seamless. If we were to rewind our conversation, we start talking about boxing rings.
Oh, please. I mean, there are so many subjects I haven't touched on, so please.
We didn't even talk about the bowling alley, Neil, but
we haven't even discussed the absence of good ethnic food here in Cape Cod.
All right. Well, listeners, please check out Neil Silberblatt. Become part of Voices of Poetry. But
absolutely, man.
He's a really great writer. His book, Past Imperfect. And, you know, Neil's really dedicated to the craft of poetry. And I'm really glad that we were able to bump heads.
Please. My pleasure. I'm glad.
Social media. And I was like, hey, come on my show. Let's talk about it. So,
my pleasure, my honor. Thank you for having me.
It was seriously a pleasure, and you're such a fun guy to talk to. We've spoken for an hour and 20 minutes, so we're going to wrap up, but I want to say check out Voices of Poetry. It's on Facebook. That's mainly the main place where you're going to catch
Neil.
And Neil's pretty active on it too, so you can.
Yes. Yes.
if you're listening, and one of the callbacks from earlier, if you are in like the West Coast and you're like, yeah, I kind of want to start some Voices of Poetry thing, you know,
absolutely.
Shout out, you know,
absolutely.
Talk to Neil, you know,
absolutely, take my brain,
yeah,
please
take my brain, please, So. I'm going to close off with at the end of every episode, I close off with a poem from a Jagged Thought, but I don't have a Jagged Thought. So I will close off with my poem, In Cidades, in memory of Joe Gouveia. So, Neil, thank you again for being on the show. It really means a lot to me. Thank you for what you're doing for the poetry community. And I do hope that, you guys keep on going. All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Bless you, man.
Thanks, man. Thank you. So this is a poem that you can find in my book, A Letter to the World. And it's called In Cidades, and it's dedicated to the memory of Joe Gouveia. So here we go. In Cidades. I'm no good at funerals. I would have been no good at Joe's. I'm going to miss Joe. I'm going to miss Joe's words, his powerful presence behind the mic, his never-give-up words, pulling no punches, telling you he was real. On Mother's Day, we lost a poet, a friend, a warrior, a survivor. We lost a poet with ice in his veins and a warm heart. I'm going to miss Joe, but his words will live on in Cidades. And that was my book. That was from A Letter to the World. I'm really glad that we could talk this much about Joe, because we both have a fondness for him, and rest in peace, Joe. And I hope if anything, you know, his poetry will be from this show, that people will check out Joe Gouveia again.
Oh, absolutely. And you've got to come out to the Cape, and we've got to visit Joe's site.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. I will totally do that, Neil. 100%.
All right.
And if there's any, is there anything going on in Joe's memory right now?
Every May, there is a memorial reading in his honor, and there's the Joe Gouveia Outermost Poetry Contest, sponsored by WOMR, and that reading will be in April. I don't know the date for that, but I'll post it on the Voices of Poetry page.
If you can let me know about that too, Neil, I will spread it on Audible Magazine.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, all right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Oddball Show. It's been a pleasure. Thank you again, Neil. And everybody, be good to each other. And you know what? Writers unite.
This is the Oddball Show, a podcasting collaboration from JP Lab Productions and Oddball Magazine.
Hey there, all you mammals and Martians. This is Prof from The Oddball Show. If you've been tuning into our preposterous podcast and like what you've been hearing, why not pop over to iTunes and leave us a review? iTunes not your thing? Well, then come on over and follow us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Buzzsprout. Learn more about who we are at oddballmagazine.com and jplineproductions.com. Link up with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. send us a tasteful yet inspiring postcard, or just give us a holler in your nearest CB radio, good buddy. On behalf of Jason Wright and myself, thanks for listening to The Oddball Show, and stay tuned.